Wall Street gets a blank check while Main Street picks up the tab. Politicians raise taxes while the private sector picks up the tab. Who's fighting for business, and how do we turn things around? Welcome to the only live and local show dedicated to the private sector and turning our economy around. This is Brian Bushlack's Business Briefing on FM News 101.
And we're back from spring break. It's 7 minutes past the hour. Welcome to Business Briefing as we kick off the business week here in studio. Patrick Stone will join us just moments away. He'll spend most of the first hour with us live and local from Alpha Broadcasting's downtown studios. Then in our next hour, we'll call on Eric Seemers from the Portland Business Journal, all things Nike. Coming up at 5:07, that and an interesting local story coming your way. But first, I want to welcome our friend and regular contributor, Patrick Stone, the president and CEO of Williston Financial Group and WFG National Title, to the show. Pat, this is the first time we've had you in studio, so thanks for spending your Sunday afternoon with us. Good to see you in person. And I wanted to kick this off talking about the U.S. economy, because you had predicted in our kickoff at the Bing Lounge downstairs a couple months ago that the economy would continue to slowly strengthen, led by the housing market, which we'll discuss later. Past 2 years, though, we've run smack dab into a big-time slowdown in the second half of the year. Do you think that's going to happen again this year? And if so, or if not, why?
Actually, Brian, thanks for having me. And it's been 3 years. We've had three what has been referred to as Prague Springs, where you think you're warming up and then you get chilly again. And both 10, 11, or all 3 years, 10, 11, and 12, that's occurred. Do I think it'll happen again this year? I do not think if it does slow down, it'll be anywhere near as pronounced, just simply because the consumer has more disposable income this year than they've had the last couple of years. However, the sequester action obviously has had some impact on the statistics being reported right now. So I do believe that we will continue to have a relatively good year. I think Goldman Sachs is thinking in excess of 2.5%. GDP growth, but I don't see it going up dramatically as the year progresses.
You mentioned consumers have more money in their pocket. Let's park on that, because we have the payroll tax holiday expire. Obviously, that's gone away. Why do people have more money in their pockets?
Well, it's a function of disposable income, percentage of disposable income that is used for debt service. And the consumers have been able to reposition their debt. They're using a lot less credit card debt. Many consumers have refinanced their homes. Net effect is that the percentage of personal disposable income needed to service debt has gone down dramatically in the last couple of years. So even though you have the payroll tax issue and you have you do not have a tremendous growth in actual base incomes, the amount of disposable income available for consumption has gone up.
That's good to hear. Patrick Stone joining us here on Business Briefing. The Fed has been printing money the past few years, yet we still have pretty high unemployment by most measures. Low wage growth and very cautious corporate guidance out there right now. I realize investors have benefited from this. Homeowners are starting to feel this turnaround now. But when will Joe Sixpack really feel it? I know you get a little more money in your pocket, but there are broad swaths of middle-class people out there right now who still are feeling the effects of what was a recession.
Well, and I don't know that the Fed can solve all the problems. I think we've really gotten in ourselves in a situation where we look at monetary policy as being a solution. And really, it's going to be fiscal policy that ultimately changes both our savings habits and our long-term economic growth. Unfortunately, the politicians don't seem to be willing to engage in any sort of meaningful fiscal policy reform. So what you have is the Fed trying to make sure that people can refinance their debt, both their mortgage debt, lower their credit use of credit cards, get lower cost personal debt credit, personal credit. So consumers are now more viable. They're able to exercise more economic impact because they have more disposable income available for consumption. But it is still not a significant amount. The amount of consumer credit in this country, not counting mortgage debt, is about $2.9 trillion. Mortgage debt's about $10 trillion. So you have a horrible amount of debt in this country still. Fed's trying to make it possible for people to have more disposable income. I think they've actually been successful. And I think they have inflated assets like stocks and houses. So I think the Fed has done as much as you can do from a monetary point of view. But until we do some fiscal reform, which will be politically inspired, we're not going to get a heck of a lot better.
We haven't heard the inflation drum beat. Obviously, you were way out front of this a couple of years ago when I got the beat down about inflation right here on this show. And you were right, of course, as always. But let's talk about that. I mean, I've been, you know, talking to people, and we talk to clients all the time who worry about interest rates rising. Obviously, in the financial sector, when we're financing large life insurance policies or mortgages or commercial real estate, that is always in the back of people's minds. When or how much will rates go up when they do go up? And I've been telling people, Pat, and I want to get your take on this, that, quite frankly, inflation is too few products on the shelves being chased by a lot of money. Now, you just said we don't have a lot of money in the hands of consumers, right? So we really can't chase too few products and drive up the prices. So if or when we do hit that tipping point, do you see in the future, maybe a few years down the road, a point where that could be an issue, or will this be an orderly exit from low interest rates?
Well, I'm smiling for a reason, Brian. I do not think that inflation is too few products being chased by too much money. I think that is a, and please don't be offended by this.
I'm not.
That's a very simplified view of the world that isn't really, I think, how it works. Inflation is typically caused by two things. It's caused by capacity utilization and high employment. Capacity utilization means if you have a company and you're producing product X, you're running three shifts a day, you're producing all the products you can, and there's more demand for your products than you have ability to produce, you raise the price. The other thing that happens is if you can't hire anybody, you have to pay more salary to get good people, so the price goes up. Those things typically drive price. That's fundamental drivers of price. Yes, if you have too much money running against too few products and that money's being spent, you would have inflation. But even though the Fed's been pumping money into the system by buying bonds, money velocity is down. There is no more money in the system now. That's bad English. The amount of money in the system now is probably equivalent to how much was in the system in the early part of this century, 2003, 2004. It has not had a profound impact on the turnover of money.
Thanks for clearing that up, because that's important to this whole issue of interest rates. And another article I saw in Business Week talked about this method of counting money, what you just referred to. And I don't know if I'm even pronouncing this right, the Divisia method of counting money when measuring how much actual liquidity the Fed has pumped into the economy. Do you agree with that?
I think it's a more accurate way of measuring money supply. But the issue here is the Fed, the issue is that whatever measurement you use, its relative change is what is important. So the Fed has been using sort of an aggregate method. And if you look at a chart of that versus Divisia, it's about the same. The net impact is about the same. Fed can't change right in the middle without getting pointed at and saying you're changing measurements to bolster your case or to mislead people. So I think that whole argument is a bit of nonsense at this point in time.
One last question for you before we hit the break here, a couple of minutes. Gas prices. U.S. now a net exporter of oil. We've talked about that on past shows here. Why then are gas prices so high? I know it's always a political issue here. I noticed that, we're about 10 cents higher than inflation-adjusted prices from last year. You've got refineries finally being built in North Dakota. Why are prices still so high?
I'm not sure that, the prices are high. I mean, if you look at the price of gas here compared to anywhere else in the world, it's incredibly low. So I'm not sure that I understand that argument. I will tell you that the prices oscillate and vary by season, by the amount of petroleum being refined. Where it's being refined has a lot to do with the price. A lot of market factors play into that. But our price of gasoline in this country is still, 60% of what it is in Europe? I mean, it's really hard to complain too much about it.
I read an article, too, that said it costs more to actually move oil around the U.S. than it does to export it. So I guess that might have something to do with it as well. And that's probably another conversation for another day. Well, when we come back with Patrick Stone, the president and CEO of Williston Financial Group and WFG National Title, we'll talk the world economy, what's going on in North Korea, reaction about Cyprus, and we haven't heard about China much lately. We'll talk to Pat about that. And then later in the show, It's time to talk real estate. Stick with us. More Business Briefing with Pat Stone when we come back.